Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes.
Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
We're back to it after a little Christmas, New Year hiatus.
Yeah. We took some time off. Everybody's busy with family and stuff, and I don't think there's as much podcast listening going on, at least according to the numbers we see, so we figured we would take a break, too, so...
That's right.
You know.
I was really looking forward to the whole Christmas break thing coming up, because I didn't have any real court appearances coming up, so, you know, could not have to dress up for work, taking a few days off from work, too. We decided to take a break from podcasting. I was really just going to kick it and not do anything. And I'll tell you, it went by so fast, I don't even know what happened.
It sure did. And I've been worn out the whole time. I couldn't wait to get to this weekend so that we could I could try to catch back up. It just seems like it's been nonstop.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, stuff going on and everything.
I mean,
but a year older over that time.
I did.
Yeah, you're almost caught up with me now, aren't you?
I don't think it works that way.
I'll come back to you if you want. I like that.
It's a race that I'm never going to win.
That's like I saw in the news last night. Three different celebrities or people that worked in the entertainment business all died, and all three of them were 76 years old. I said, damn, I'm glad I'm not 76. It's bad time, bad day for 76-year-olds.
Was it Mean Gene Okerlund, the wrestling guy?
Yeah, he was one of them.
I saw that.
Yeah, three different guys, and all of them were 76.
He was the mainstay of my youth.
Yeah? Another one was on a TV show, but I forget who it was now.
Oh, it was a guy that played Super Dave.
Yeah, Dave Osborne. Yeah, and he's somebody's brother, too, that I didn't know about. Some other actor's brother. But they were all 76.
What's the whole Appalachian death comes in threes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, those three happened in the same day, and they're all the same age.
Ooh, spooky.
Man, that is spooky.
Yeah.
You didn't have to wait for them to turn up. It just did.
Well, getting back to our podcast, we decided we were going to do an episode for the one that somebody had suggested on the court-appointed Facebook page. Matt Kesserling posted on our Facebook, court-appointed Facebook page, an article about a recent court case in Broward County, Florida, where a federal judge had ruled that the school resource officer had no duty to protect students at the Parkland School Massacre. So we thought, hey, let's get into that a little bit, because why not?
Because it just sounds wrong.
It does sound wrong. So whenever we were talking about a duty to protect.
Duty. I might as well get it out of the way, because there's going to be a lot of duty in this episode.
You've kind of ruined my legal career, because... as lawyers, I have to say the word duty quite a bit when I'm talking about negligence and things like that. And
my voice rings in the back of your head every time you say it.
It does. It haunts me now.
I'm glad to know. See, when I hit 76 and I'm gone, see, you'll still be a practicing. Every time you say it, you'll remember your old buddy Tommy.
But you generally don't have a duty to protect or rescue somebody. Now, under common law, there were some exceptions. So let's go back into what common law is. Common law is basically law that was handed down from England.
Jolly old England.
England to the United States.
The bobbies would save you with their bobby sticks.
It's a series of law that basically provides the basis for most of our laws, but it truly doesn't exist as a body of law anywhere. So it's not like, we employ just common law here in this state.
Well, they used to have common law marriages.
They did, yeah. That's part of it. But it's kind of all of common law has pretty much been dissolved. There's still some out there, but the one place you do find a lot of common law is on the bar exam. That's the multi-state exam uses pretty much all common law for their questions.
How about in Virginia?
What about in Virginia?
Well, they're the Commonwealth. You'd think they'd have common law.
So is Kentucky. Kentucky's a Commonwealth too, I believe.
Why wouldn't they have common law then?
I don't know.
Hmm.
But under common law,
it would seem common.
It would seem common. So do we have state law since we're a state?
Yeah.
Okay. So there is no general duty to protect or come to the rescue of another. A person cannot be held liable for doing nothing when another person is in peril. But there are certain situations where you actually do have some sort of responsibility. I'm going to change my words around so I don't keep using that same word.
Some sort of responsibility.
Yeah. Now, you may have a responsibility to rescue somebody whenever you create a certain hazardous situation. So basically, if another person falls into peril because of some hazardous situation you created, you may have to rescue that person or help them because you essentially caused the problem that started it. Another instance where you might have a duty to rescue or...
have a duty. Sounds like a personal problem.
I almost got away with that when you just kind of looked at me funny.
Speaking of duty, did you hear... They were interviewing people standing in Times Square during, the New York City ball drop.
Yeah.
And they were talking about them wearing diapers so that they could stand there for 10 hours and not have to go to the bathroom. And the one girl said, unless my diaper gets full, I'm going to be right here.
I mean,
oh, God.
No, thank you. Can you imagine the smell?
Oh, man. Did you see the next day the cleaning up?
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah, that's a bad situation.
Man, I'll say. It would take an army to clean all that up.
I would not want to be there.
I wouldn't either.
I mean, sitting in my house watching Dick Clark is good enough for me.
We got a good view of the ball dropping, right?
We did. There also may be a responsibility to rescue somebody or help them out when there's some sort of special relationship. Some examples of that is parents basically have a responsibility to rescue their minor children. It also can apply to people who are acting in loco parentis, basically acting in the place of the parents.
Oh,
That could be like possibly schools or babysitters or things like that. Common carriers have a general duty to rescue their patrons. That could be like airlines or trains or things like that. Amtrak probably has a duty to rescue their passengers if they're in some sort of perilous situation. Employers can have the responsibility to rescue employees under an implied contract theory. In some U.S. jurisdictions, real property owners have a duty to rescue invitees, but not trespassers, from all reasonably foreseeable dangers to the property. So,
all right, but my question on that would be, to clarify, rescue them, would they have to place themselves in peril and do that? Or is that just common sense thing? Like, okay, the bus that the people were traveling in drove through the guardrail is hanging over the edge. Yes, the bus company, if they can do something to get a line to those people to get them off the bus before it falls, they should do that. But do they have to, would the bus company employees be responsible for climbing along the bus and trying to hand people out?
Well, I'm going to kind of get into that here in 1 second.
I was going to say.
We'll talk about it.
I would say not. If the cop doesn't have to do a cop job, then a bus driver doesn't have to do a bus driver job.
Spouses have a duty to rescue each other in pretty much all U.S. jurisdictions.
And risk your life?
And some states actually have laws in the books that require you to at least notify law enforcement or help strangers that are in peril. So basically, make a phone call. It's the least you could do. Now, whenever there is a duty to rescue or help somebody, the responsibility you have is to act with reasonable care. So you have to ask yourself, what is reasonable? And when we talk about negligence and responsibility and duty and things like that, the reasonable person standard is what always comes into play. And, is it reasonable for somebody to jump onto a flaming bus that's going 60 miles per hour down the road to try to pull somebody off? No.
I would hope not.
Yeah.
Well, you're a bus employee. Do it. We have a duty.
You knew it came with a job when you put on that hat.
That's right.
No, I mean, that's probably a little bit much. We're talking more about your common kind of things. If somebody has their leg trapped underneath like a bus or something like that, and you can throw a lever to possibly lift the hydraulics up so it comes up or something like that. I mean, if somebody has their hand caught in a door.
Right. Something that you don't have to risk your own life.
Yeah. We're talking about slightly less common things than a scene from the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock.
Say, okay, now look here. I'm going to go out the door here. You all are welcome to exit out the back way because I don't want nobody in my way when I get out of here before this thing blows up.
Exactly. So that's kind of the common law and some state law approach to who has a duty to rescue people. Now, here's the interesting thing. It's generally been held that police officers don't have the same responsibility to act to protect you, which is kind of strange.
It's very strange. In all my years of living, I didn't realize how truly ignorant I was until I read that ruling and what it said about policemen not having a duty to protect. It says it right there on the police car. Yeah. Protect and serve. Nope, scratch that out. You're not here to protect.
Now, the article that Matt posted about had to do with the Parkland school massacre, which took place down in Florida. This article came out, I think, December 18th or something there about when the judge made the ruling on it. And that was a judge from the federal court came out and basically said that the police officer did not have a responsibility to protect or try to save anybody. But that same day, a county court judge ruled that the officer did have a duty to confront the armed intruder. So there are actually two different kind of rulings that came out on that same day, but they're different cases.
Well, that county judge is going to be reelected by the population of that county probably where it happened. So
you think that came into play?
I think it could have.
It might have very well. That's why you have those federal judges who are up there for life. They don't really care.
That's right.
They're applying it probably strictly.
But I'm going to say I agree with that county judge, whatever their reasons were.
Yeah. So, as I said, generally speaking, police officers are not under any general legal obligation to protect citizens who aren't in their custody. Now, the article that Matt had shared had an interview with Darren Hutchinson, who is a law professor and associate dean at the University of Florida School of Law. Go Gators. And basically, it says, neither the Constitution nor state law impose a general duty upon police officers or other governmental officials to protect a person from harm, even when they know harm will occur. Police can watch someone attack you, refuse to intervene, and not violate the Constitution. So
That's just unbelievable in my mind that is possible.
Now, there are certain situations where courts have held that the police do have a duty to protect people. And I want to explain some of those. But before that, I think we might have some pending motions today.
Why, we do have a pending motion there, Your Honorship.
It's our first motion of 2019.
And let it be a good motion. Our good friends of Sleep Number are back with us again.
That's right. Let me tell you something. It is imperative to get a good night's sleep, and there's no better way than to do it than with a Sleep Number bed.
You get to sleep smarter, play better, and that's your competitive edge. And during January, it's a savings event where you can save up to $500 on select Sleep Number 360 smart beds.
Now, the new Sleep Number 360 smart bed helps everyone from parents to pro athletes improve their daily performance through proven quality sleep.
I mean, the NFL guys use it because they endorse that. I see them on there all the time doing those endorsements and doing those commercials. I think, hey, they're just like us.
Except bigger, stronger, faster, smarter, better looking, and with more money.
Oh, yeah. Well, except for those things, we're just exactly the same. Now, so many couples disagree on mattress firmness. Well, we've been into that before, so I won't expand on that. Sleep Number 360 smart beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side so it's just right for both of you.
And Sleep Number has been ranked highest in customer satisfaction with mattresses by J.D. Power. For 2018 award information, visit jdpower.com.
Now, we want you to come in during the January savings event and save up to $500 on a Sleep Number 360 smart bed.
And as Tommy alluded to earlier, Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner in the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide.
So visit sleepnumber.com/court and find the one nearest you.
That's sleepnumber.com/court.
And have a good firmness.
A good firmness?
Did you just get that?
Now, the police do have a responsibility to protect somebody when somebody is in their custody.
So they're going to protect the convicts. Oh, that's great. Well, the rest of us are on our own. All you innocent, law-abiding citizens, we're going to let you die. All you convicts, we're going to put our lives on the line to protect you.
Now, courts have rejected somewhat the argument that students are in the custody of school officials when they are on campus. Custody can be narrowly defined as situations where a person loses his or her freedom to move freely and seek assistance on their own. Prisons, jails, and mental institutions.
I've heard school referred to in all three of those terms.
Definitely. I remember it being like that a little bit myself.
Yeah, me too.
Now, there could be some exceptions, though, and this is kind of interesting. Whenever you have like a crossing guard who is specifically assigned to protect children traveling across the street, which allows a child to get run over, and say if that child was like not paying attention for some reason, then the crossing guard has some sort of special relationship with the children in legal eyes. So even though that police officer is a crossing guard, they actually do have a duty to protect the child from the traffic because that's their one job and they have a special relationship to do that. Now, that one little caveat could be the reason why the county judge was able to make a determination that that officer was liable in that case. If that judge found that the school resource officer basically had some sort of duty to protect those inside the school and refused to do so and basically didn't do that because they have that special relationship, then basically you could kind of make that nexus there where there is a responsibility there. They've taken on that extra little bit of responsibility.
Well, I mean, what is the guy there for? He's supposed to be there for the student's safety and the well-being of the school in general. And if all he's going to do is run and hide somewhere and take care of himself, they got the wrong guy. Whatever legally was right here, morally, the guy's a coward. And he deserves all the bad things that are said about him and everything else. He should have to move away somewhere and live in a somewhere where he's, you know, nobody can see him, isolated like a hermit.
Well, I'm not going to go that far. I mean, if the guy froze on the job, I mean, obviously he didn't do what he was supposed to do. But, I mean,
He thought he had a cush job.
Maybe that job just wasn't for him.
He thought he had a cush job, sat there collecting the money, but when the time came that he needed to do his job, the job that the people relied on him, he just gave up. And then he said, well, I've had enough. I'll retire now. Yeah, good job. You should have retired before all that.
Well, I'm not really ready to go push this guy in front of a moving bus. So.
I am.
Okay. Well, good for you.
I care about children, Michael.
Yeah. I care about not getting sued by somebody who listens to a podcast and for all that.
Well, that's my opinion. If he doesn't have to protect kids, I'm allowed to have my opinion.
Now, like I said, the county lawsuit, they argued that basically he did have some sort of special relationship with students and staff, and basically he was specially assigned to offer the protection for there. So that's kind of the basis where the county court was a little bit different than the arguments from the federal court. Now, you can see video footage, which basically shows that he was the only armed officer at the school, and he stayed outside while shots were fired, and you could hear them outside. The one thing that also is kind of a weird situation is he did actually call in the code red, which actually locked the school down. So rather than students fleeing from the school, they were actually locked in the school.
Yeah, he locked them in there with the shooter.
So the Orlando Sun-Sentinel, I saw an article today, has a very interactive timeline and map of the shooting. And if you go to their website, and I'll probably put it up on the court-appointed page whenever this episode's released, you can actually scroll through it, and it goes through detailed time by time what took place and where people were and what happened. And it's pretty disturbing that this took place.
Well, it said there was a multitude of failures on the part of the school and the law enforcement officials in the response to the shooting, and at least 8 sheriff's deputies who raced to the school and heard gunshots stayed outside the building, and they wrote a 400-page draft report that officers lost even more time scrambling to retrieve bulletproof vests from their cars.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, that by the time they got everything squared away and got their bulletproof vests on and everything else and then went in, it was over.
I thought they always wore bulletproof vests all the time to begin with.
I did, too. Maybe they were heavier armored ones or something like that. But maybe I thought they had them on under their stuff, unless in Florida it's too hot, so you'd only put it on what you have to. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think they usually do. That Orlando Sun-Sentinel interactive map basically shows where the Coral Springs police officers, they're like the local city cops, they went charging in there as soon as they got there, basically. Mm-hmm. And it said basically that during their training they were taught to run towards the gunfire to stop it, because every time you heard a shot, that could be somebody getting shot or killed.
So sure.
That's kind of their teaching and their instructions and what they were told to do. Now, for the most part, from my understanding, that's actually what the consensus is. That's the training of what you're supposed to do in these situations as a law enforcement officer. You're supposed to run towards the gunshots.
Well, I mean, especially if you're in a school. I mean, with the history of what's going on, it's sad to say, there was a time when you would hear that and people might hesitate because they weren't sure what was happening, because it would be such a foreign thought.
Yeah.
Now, with the commonality of it, that it's like, yes, that's exactly what's going on. And somebody better get there that has some type of firepower to put this person down, or at least deter them. In some cases, you know, all they have to do is see somebody armed and they give up.
Yeah.
It's not like you even have to actually shoot them down or anything.
Basically, that one officer, he stayed in the same spot for 48 minutes is what the Sun Sentinel thing said. He didn't move from that one spot.
No, he had a good safe spot where he was in there with his weapon to protect himself.
Yeah.
And he let 17 children die and 17 more get injured.
Now, whether or not he would have stopped the guy, I mean, who knows, who can say.
But he could have tried.
Yeah.
That's what it'd be one thing if he went in the wrong building or couldn't catch up with the guy or something like that. But the fact he didn't even try, he put forth no effort.
One of the other kind of bad things is they went and looked at the surveillance footage, which actually was time delayed. And so when they were looking at the time delayed video, they actually thought it was real time.
Right.
And so they were giving reports incorrectly as to where this guy was because it was 20 minutes late. I mean, to me, that's pretty negligent, not knowing that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That's life or death right there. So
somebody, at least the resource officer, should have been able to tell other units as they're approaching, there is a feed, it's on a 2-minute delay or whatever it is, so what you're seeing is after the fact, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But this was somebody that clearly had never thought about, what if this happens at the school I'm working at, what will I do?
Yeah, it's a sad situation. And like I said, from most of my understanding, from what I've read after this, is that the training for police officers in situations like this is to go towards the gunfire. And that's one thing that I do kind of have maybe a bit of a problem with. If that's what you're trained to do and that's part of your job, and you don't do what you're trained to do and you're not following basically what your instructions are, then at that point, I think maybe you are negligent because you're not doing what you're instructed to do. Now, if they said their training was set up a perimeter, make sure he doesn't escape, well, then maybe he did what he was supposed to do.
Right.
But it seems to me the training is that you're supposed to go intercept the guy.
Yeah.
So
stop him.
Yeah.
I mean, I liken it to, I don't know how much different it is, police force and the military. I mean, to me, they're kind of the same thing. And a lot of people in the police force came from the military. And could you imagine if you're in the military and you're engaged in battle and you just say, hell with this, and turn around and run off? Those other guys are shooting. Yeah, that's what this is all about. I got no duty to protect. I'm getting out of here. I'm looking out for me. You know,
yeah.
What if they do that? Is that all right? Do they have to protect?
Yeah.
I was utterly shocked. Like I say, I did not realize my ignorance when it came to this, that this could actually be the fact. And I've read several other articles since then to back that up, where it's gone all the way to the Supreme Court on different rulings.
Yeah, there are. And there's some several cases here that I want to talk about. One is Warren v. District of Columbia. That's a 1981 case. And two men broke into some people's rooms at a boarding house. And when the police arrived, the police came after being called. 911 was called. And the police didn't really act. And because of that, and the women there saw the police come up, but they didn't actually come up to the room where they were. But they thought the police were the ones who were there. But actually, it was still the people who were still in the building. And because of that, the women were held hostage for an extra 14 hours, and they were subjected to all kinds of horrible physical and emotional things. And they sued, and the court held the police had no obligation to help them out and weren't responsible for all the physical and emotional trauma that they went through, even though they didn't really act and try to protect them from those burglars and just bad people.
Yeah, I mean, these two women called, and they heard the third woman being attacked downstairs.
Yeah.
And called. Now, they didn't know she was being attacked. They knew she was screaming, and they knew there were people in there. So they reported it as a robbery.
Right.
And one cop went up and knocked on the front door. Another one drove by the back door. But nobody actually came to help anybody. And then eventually, when they heard the screaming stop, they thought maybe the cops had gotten in and gotten them. So they go back in the building and come to find out the guy was still there, and they grabbed them.
Yeah.
And then they had all three of them.
Yeah. So that was one of the first cases that you come across when you're looking into this kind of issue. Another case was this Castle Rock v. Gonzalez. And this is a really sad case. A woman had a restraining order against her husband and the father of her three children, and the man took his daughters in violation of a court order on June 22nd around 5:15 p.m. The wife called the police that same day at 7:30, at 8:30, and 10:10, and they didn't do anything. She went to the police station the next day at 12:40. Police didn't believe her since basically sometimes she had allowed the husband to take the children, so they didn't really do anything. That same day at 3:20 on the 23rd, he showed up at the police station and then engaged in a shootout with the police. And then when they searched his car, they found the bodies of the three children in the car. So, you know, the police didn't act on there. And the court basically held that since that they don't have a duty to respect that restraining order, they didn't have a duty to protect the people, which is crazy if you think about it. I mean, that's kind of what you would think that would be all about.
Yeah. And they said that the police officers have no duty to enforce a restraining order.
Yeah.
That's strictly up to them if they want to proceed or not. So she said, well, she's called him, says that he's got the kids, he's violating the restraining order. They said, oh, well.
Yeah.
And didn't care. And then he pulls up with the dead kids in the trunk and has a shootout with the cops. That's the only time they were defending themselves at that point.
Yeah.
That's just, this is just very disappointing to me about all that.
And, you know, whenever we talk about anything on this show, I feel like we always invariably come back to the reasonable person standard. And we talk about, you know, what does a reasonable person do in a situation like this and things like that. And I mean, I think it's reasonable that people believe that the police are there to protect them in these situations. I mean, after all, like you said, their motto is to serve and protect. Yet they don't have any obligation. I mean, if that's true, I think they need to change their motto. Maybe take it off the side of their car.
I think there have been some places that have gone through some lawsuits like you just named.
Yeah.
And they have removed that from their cars as a point of, you know, you can't say you protect, and then when it comes down to it, we didn't protect. And that's okay. Serve and protect if we want to.
Yeah.
If we feel like it. I mean, I just don't believe that. I mean, I just always felt like, you know, that if you've got a cop on the premises when something bad like that happens, that's who you turn to that should be protecting people.
Yeah, and I think probably for the most part, they usually do.
Yeah, but evidently they're acting on their own.
They're renegades.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I found an article from 2012, so this was before Parkland or any of the other stuff, and this basically was something that was put out by the police unions to policemen explaining this to them, that you don't have a duty to rush in and do anything like that. And as a matter of fact, you're really walking kind of a border as to if you do decide to go ahead and do it, you may do something that puts yourself in jeopardy, not just being killed, but being sued because you do it. Whereas if you don't do anything, you can't get in trouble. So it was almost outlining to the cops that you're better to err on the side of inactivity rather than stepping in and trying to be a hero.
You know why?
Why?
Because all those lawyers suing everybody. It's all the lawyers' fault.
Well, that's probably true. Do you know any of them? You know where we can find one? We'll string him up.
I'll call the cops. He'll come save me.
No, he won't. They'll just point you out. But, it's just unbelievable that it would do it. And it was even saying, it was carrying it as far as, you know, like in one case, a child was in heart arrest. And so the officer administered CPR. Well, he ended up contracting a virus from this child and died 5 years later.
Oof.
So that's what they're saying, is that even in cases of that, you show up and the officer, they're trained in CPR, but the officer can choose whether to do it or not, because he's basically placing himself at risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, that this was something they had this professor basically that came in and was telling them that, you know, you really are creating more of a risk by going in and helping people or putting your life on the line than if you just remain inactive and vigilant. Just watch. Then you can be a good witness as to who killed the victim there.
They'll get their just desserts in the end.
That's right. We'll take them to court for 10 years and then cut a plea deal. They had one where a police officer stopped a motorcyclist for speeding, but he didn't perform a field sobriety test. And then that motorcyclist 10 minutes down the road wrecked and killed himself. So the family sued the cop for not doing a field sobriety test and getting him off the motorcycle. And they said, nope, wasn't his job.
I mean, I can see that being actually a halfway decent lawsuit.
But here's what's strange to me. There are people that do have a duty to protect, and they can be held responsible, and they can be sued.
Well, you know, let me ask you a question. I wonder if this would change if basically the police officer pulls that person over, puts him in handcuffs, talks to him, says, you know what, has a change of heart, I'm going to let this guy go, then lets him go. Because at that point, he's already put him in custody and taken control of him, then lets him go. I wonder if that's like a different scenario.
I think once he's cleared the custody scene, he's all right. Now, if he's in handcuffs on the side of the road and a truck runs over him, then the cop's got problems.
I don't know. I could see that being a slightly different issue if he actually takes him into custody for a second and then releases him.
He could always say, well, the guy seemed combative at first, so I did that for my own personal protection, you know? And then once I talked to him, I realized that he wasn't. He was just agitated about something. He was fine, and I turned him loose. But I don't know. It seems like there's always something. But, you know, you would think that of all the people in society that do have a duty to protect, police would be at the top of the list.
Yeah.
But instead, the ones that you can hold responsible for it are like social workers and certain like psychologists and things like that. They're the ones that have a duty to protect, that if somebody goes out and kills somebody and you had as a psychiatrist, they had been coming to see you and telling you that they were thinking about killing somebody and you didn't do anything, you can be held responsible for that. You had a duty to protect that person. As a social worker, if you get notified of child abuse or something like that, you have a duty to step in and protect. And if you don't do your job right and follow up on it right, you could be held responsible for that.
Well, there are also people called mandatory reporters. So basically, if you are a mandatory reporter and you see child abuse, you have to actually report it.
But those people are putting themselves in the same peril as they could report somebody that they think they have every reason in the world to believe there's some type of abuse situation going on, or that this person is a threat to somebody. And then come to find out it wasn't, whatever the person relayed, it was just, you know, it was misunderstood. And then now you're on the other end of a lawsuit because you violated this person's confidence.
Yeah, well, a lot of those things are kind of confidential reporting, too. So they wouldn't necessarily identify who it was that reported it. So I think you can make a anonymous tip about something.
Your psychiatrist calls it an anonymous tip?
Yeah. Came to me in a dream.
But, I mean, I these guys, which, you know, I don't want to defend any of them because the state of West Virginia, I'll say that our social workers are way overworked and are way underpaid and everything else. But there are so many kids here that slip through the cracks that are not protected and are not defended. And these are ones that supposedly you can hold responsible for not doing the job of protecting people. But at the same time, they might have put their life on the line because they're dealing with some people that are unstable out there. And, you know, you try to take somebody's kids away from them, you might be in trouble there when you do that. Some people won't react very well.
Especially in some of these rural areas.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The people won't react very well to those kind of things. I learned that just going to repossess cars. That was dangerous enough.
I'm sure.
When the guy told me, he said, you take my car and I'll shoot you. I said, buddy, if you shoot me, you'll have a lot more problems than a past due bill. That didn't seem to faze him.
No, I don't think he was thinking about that. I think I'm going to shoot this college boy here.
Yeah, for taking my car. You know, in contrast to what happened at Stoneman Douglas and that resource officer just sitting on his butt and doing nothing, there was a shooter in Maryland at Great Mills High School just a month later, in March of 2018. And he was neutralized by the swift action by the school's resource officer, Blaine Gaskell. Gaskell's response was hailed as an example of exactly what a resource officer is supposed to do in such circumstances, particularly when contrasted to the actions of the security officer in last month's shooting in Parkland, Florida.
Yeah. I remember after that happened, I mean, he basically confronted the guy, dropped him right there, and that was that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, they're trained. Here's the thing these guys should know. I know that nobody wants to go in and face a gun, but you're trained in what you're doing. The person on the other end, it's a 19, 20-year-old kid. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Unless he's played a lot of Call of Duty.
Well, even then, I think there's a difference between playing a game and really doing it. I would hope.
I don't know. Pretty realistic these days.
Well, it could be. But, you know, they get into that, too, about this the school resource officers. Their whole goal is not really to protect the children. You have two different things going on at schools. You have a school resource officer, and then you have school security. So a lot of times, that's totally different. The resource officer was basically put there. The idea came about back in the 70s, putting officers in schools to build relationships with kids so that kids aren't afraid of cops or don't like cops. So it was basically to try to build that up. So their role was more of a mentor and a PR type thing. Mm-hmm. And I think in the 70s when they put them in, they never really had the thought of they're going to be here to take down gunmen that come in the schools, you know?
Yeah.
So your school resource officer, I don't know if they train them the way they're supposed to. Now, if you're in the school as a security officer, if you're a policeman that's in the security officer, that should be your training and that should be your job. I don't know that they should actually be two separate things, but they do delineate between the two separate jobs that cops are hired for in the schools.
I always thought they were one and the same.
No, the school resource officer, a lot of times, like I say, they're there for PR and to mentor kids, you know?
I wonder if that guy in Maryland, if he was a resource officer or he was a security officer.
Well, a lot of people use the terms interchangeably. This article calls him the school's resource officer.
Yeah.
So, but whether that's actually what he was or not, I don't know. I mean, and like I say, a lot of people use those terms, even though they may really be one or the other.
Yeah, I always say. I mean, I use them interchangeably. I never made a delineation between the two.
Yeah, but there is a difference. And the resource officer, a lot of times he will be in, you know, they'll tie him into classroom stuff that they do to teach kids things about drugs and stuff like that.
Drugs are bad, kids.
How to use them and where to buy them. What the exchange rate is. You know, just like that one article, what's the exchange rate for marijuana and Whoppers or something like that? The guy who went up to the McDonald's or whatever and tried to buy Big Macs with marijuana or something like that.
It's got
to
be pretty low, I would think.
Well, I don't know. The more marijuana you smoke, the more Big Macs you want.
Yeah. A dime bag will get you a bag of Whoppers. Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal terms I mentioned and see if he can remember them.
Duty.
That's actually not one of them.
Cops have no duty.
I think they take duties. They eat a lot of donuts. They take duties.
Did you see him watching the Krispy Kreme donut truck burn
crying? I did see that. That was local. And Krispy Kreme, there was a picture that made its rounds on social media, some local police officers who were seen in a scene crying when a Krispy Kreme truck was on fire. Krispy Kreme, actually, I'd read today, sent them all a bunch of donuts to console them. Pretty funny. Okay, the first term is in loco parentis. What does that mean?
That means that you're like the person in charge of the kid.
Literally translated, it means in place of parents.
Yeah, so, like the guardian.
Yeah, parentis means parent and loco means place. So place of parents. And that actually, if you are staying in the place of parents, then you have a duty or responsibility to protect a child. So,
but you don't have to risk your life.
Yeah, be reasonable about it.
But, you know, I've seen some ones, I don't know. I guess it's a harsh statement to make. It always bothers me when, like, the father makes it out of the burning house, but the kids didn't make it. Mm-hmm. My kids would not be left in a burning house. I might burn with them, but they wouldn't be left there with me standing outside going, whew, that was a close one.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think I actually said this term.
Oh, no, you're going to slip in one of those, huh? It was inferred.
Tortfeasor.
Tortfeasor? No, you didn't say that. That sounds like a fart gun or something.
So a tortfeasor is one who commits the tort. So, for example, in case of a car accident where someone hits you, the person who hit you would be the tortfeasor. So in some instances, a tortfeasor has a duty to rescue or help you out if they put you in that peril, which I was going to touch on the fact that if they put you in that hazardous situation, then they have some sort of responsibility to help you out of that situation. So a tortfeasor can have a responsibility under that pattern there. So that's a gimme. I'll give you that one.
Tortfeasor. That sounds like a made-up lawyer word.
I did say this one. Invitee.
Invitee?
Yep.
Well, that'd be like you used it as somebody being on your property. If they were invitee, that means that you invited them over or they came over and you acknowledged that they could be there or whatever.
That's true. It is a invited person, specifically a person who is present in a place by the express or implied invitation of the occupier in control of the place under circumstances that impose a duty on the occupier to use reasonable care to protect the safety of the invited person, which is different than possibly a licensee or a trespasser, which are different delineations of people who come onto property.
Which is why on New Year's Eve, you couldn't hit me with your newly acquired swords because I was your invitee, so you had to protect me or else I would own you.
I don't know. I mean, those were just play swords. I could have probably bashed you with those and been okay.
I don't think so. I don't think you can bash people with things real or play and it's okay.
I did accidentally poke a hole through something with one of those swords.
What does that say about you that people for gifts bring you swords?
I don't really know. I was not expecting swords for a birthday present.
You got swords for a birthday present.
Yeah, Joe brought me two swords for my birthday. And they were both the swords of Conan the Barbarian.
I want to see you go wielding both at the same time because those are two-handed swords.
They're definitely two-handed swords.
They weigh like 25 pounds each. And you swing them around with one hand for a couple times. Okay, I'm done.
I'm going to have to hit the gym if I'm wielding those with one hand. I'm more of a board and sword kind of guy anyway. I'm a one-handed sword guy.
I would be like Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones when the guy comes out doing all those fancy sword twirling and all that kind of stuff, and he just pulls out his gun, poof, shoots it.
You remember in Temple of Doom, there was a similar scene, and he almost gets this like, oh, I know this scene before, and he reaches down for his gun, and it's not there, and he smiles.
Yeah. You know that I read that was improvised.
Oh,
that was not planned, that the guy came out, and he was supposed to confront him, but that Harrison Ford was running a fever on the day of shooting that day, and he was just kind of tired. So just for the hell of it, he just reached down and did that, and it cracked up the crew so much that they decided to keep that in the movie.
Rather than a prolonged fight?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Maybe we need Harrison Ford as a school resource officer.
He would take care of things.
Get off my school!
What about Arnold Schwarzenegger, if he was there? Conan, give him those two swords?
I'll be back.
I imagine more like the Bennett from Commando. Could be a more of a efficient school resource officer.
Chuck Norris.
Or no, not Bennett. His name's not Bennett.
Who are you talking about?
The guy from Arnold Schwarzenegger's character in Commando is not Bennett.
I don't remember. I remember the movie, but I don't remember his name.
Well, I just remember the last scene.
Hell, I barely remember my name.
The last scene, he takes the guy and he basically impales him on a steam pipe. And steam starts coming out as the guy's like, they're dying. He's like, hey, Bennett, let off some steam.
No remorse, huh?
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...